Okay.
I'm gonna record me talking and now you talking. Welcome to Totally Unrelated.
Me.
I'm your host, Adrian Cosby. I'm
Yay.
sitting here with Karen Jaffe, who many of you probably already know. She is the reigning queen of comedy in the Northern Hemisphere, specifically to the Dayton region. But I'm going to start this episode with a little story about the first time I remember meeting Karen. It was before I started doing stand-up. Was I on crutches when we met?
I don't know if you were on crutches, but I think you might have had a brace on, so you might have,
Okay.
yeah, you might have been on crutches.
Okay.
I don't remember the crutches.
I was taking an improv class that I signed up for while I was still on bed rest from ACL replacement surgery on my knee. So I had been on crutches for the first couple sessions, but as I remember my first few improv classes, you not being there, you being there maybe for my second session.
Correct.
Sesh was what I was
Yeah,
going to say.
sesh, totes.
And the first thing that stood out to me was that you were doing something different than everybody else, and that we were all learning and you were doing improv.
Yes, that's
So
probably true.
that was different. So I was instantly intimidated. Before that, the first time I went into the improv class, I felt like I can play with these guys. But sometimes, like when you're in a situation, it's not, I never thought of improv as being competition until I realized other people did. You know what I mean? And I think there's just a competition in some people.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in me for improv, but I remember feeling like I needed to play better. I needed to step up my game or at least study what was going on a little bit more when you were in a scene because it your visual disappointment
Oh no.
was
Sound horrible.
no, it's just one of those things where it's like coaching with facial expressions. You know what I mean? It's like you're doing well, you're not doing well, you
Right.
know. And there's That's great. I mean, that's kind of awesome when you're thinking about the improv scenario because the audience may not see your face or understand that your face isn't part of the character that you're currently in and that it's a message for me.
Oh
You
no.
know, and I think
Okay.
that's one thing. There's an undercurrent. It's like you and I are communicating despite what we're actually saying. It's kind of like when you're doing stand-up and you're a few jokes ahead in your own head. But I remember you gave me a compliment and that was the greatest thing ever. In fact, I just think all you said was that you thought I was amazing.
Because you are amazing.
Well, at the time, I didn't see myself as amazing. I didn't think of
Okay.
myself in any way, shape, or form as amazing. I mean, clearly today, I'm pretty amazing. But I just remember that gave me a big boost of confidence, and it made me want to, be a professional improvisationer, and improvisationalist.
Improviser?
No, thinking like
No.
improvisist, but something in that frame. And we were sitting around a table, and you were talking about your doctor or something like that, said something really crass to you. And I said, "Oh, is he
Oh,
part of the
God.
program Doctors Without Filters?"
Oh, I remember exactly what he said, too. Oh,
Can you share it?
Oh, yeah. Well, he didn't mean to say, to be fair, he's a family friend and he didn't mean to sound crass. But he was explaining to me, I had a bug bite or something on my arm. And I said, "Oh yeah, I'm really allergic to bug bites." And he said, "Yeah." And then he out of nowhere said that he had gotten crabs from a movie theater.
That's right.
I'll never forget that. And I said, "I'm
That's a natural
sorry."
segue. Yeah, that's just like.
I'm sorry, were you naked in the movie theater?" And he said, "No, but it was the 70s. And so, of course, I said, well, was it deep throat? You know, like, were you, mm-hmm. you know, did you, oops, like, did something fall out of the short shorts you must have been mm-hmm. wearing because it was the 70s?
Nylon's not a great barrier.
He just said, no, you know, he went and saw a movie and then he went back to med school or the lab and he had crabs.
I'm glad I think... have a microscope here. Let's see what's going on.
Yeah, I think he meant just body lice, but mm-hmm. He said crabs, and that stuck with
it's
me.
It's funny how that works, right? Same thing, totally different branding.
Totally different branding. So I can't believe that was one of our first conversations.
And what makes that even more crazy is that was like in 2011.
Was it? Yeah, it was.
It was like
absolutely
an early
was.
2011.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I had that much memory left.
That
was great. And so from there, that like when I said that, like it was almost like that was a joke that I'd had in my pocket,
mm-hmm.
right? That's like a stand-up thing or something.
Sure.
But I've never used it for stand-up. It was...
Good,
retired.
I have, actually.
Okay, good. I think I gave it to you that night. I think I was like, you can use that, because you were a stand-up comic, and I wasn't interested in that at the time.
Yeah.
And it was through your interventionalism, mm-hmm. interventionization, intervenious comedy.
I just put you on a drip.
Put me on a drip. Yeah, it all happened. A lot of it all, it was almost like you were my, what's the lighthouse?
Oh, I like that.
You know, I was kind of a boat out in the middle of the water, mm-hmm. and you were like, come this way.
Don't hit the rocks.
Don't hit the rocks, but, you know, weasel
here.
To you. And that was huge. And it's also been a huge part of how I try to be as a comedian in that being a lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily being... a megaphone or you need to do it this way or you need to do this. If you want to do this, then you got to do this. But just being like, this is where this happens.
Yeah.
I can show you where this happens. And it was really great the way it happened because I came to watch you and the other guys and you guys were better than most of the other open micers. But when I think back to how horrible we must have been back then.
Oh, yeah. Wretched.
Yeah,
probably.
Well, not even... Not to people, but to ourselves.
Sure.
For how far we've come. And then and how far yet we still have to go.
Oh, absolutely.
But I just remember thinking the first 10 open mics that I went to go see as I was like following you guys around to go to shows and support and stuff. As I was just thinking about that, once I signed up, then I ended up going to a lot of shows because I wanted to see how it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And... I just remember that period of my life as being like, feeling like I was in kindergarten. You know what I mean? Like I was like, wait, we get to go outside and play now? Oh, wait, when's lunch? And it's amazing how I think a new comic is served to a certain extent by taking on that I don't know everything.
Right.
In fact, I know next to nothing, so I need someone to kind of show me, guide me, teach me. And it's a lot of trial by fire, but there's people along the way that are good teachers and people along the way that are bad teachers but still get the point across of what needs to be taught.
Sure.
And, I just remember that whole first year of doing stand-up as being completely magical but also being led around by the hand. Like this is where you need to go, this is who you need to meet. Every gig that I got probably started or came through you in some way, shape, or form.
Or
a connection that I made from you.
Okay. Maybe, but...
Like, remember we did that Troy contest that you won?
Yes!
What was the catchphrase for that night?
Booyah.
Was it Booyah?
Uh-huh.
Booyah.
Booyah.
Those were some weird... That was
something
Troy,
like that.
Ohio, right?
That was Troy. That was the Troy Eagles Club.
Troy Eagles.
And I remember you drove.
Yep.
And we pulled into the parking lot, and I looked at you, and I said, okay, well, we might both die here.
We met for the first time Laura Feld. For the first time, I met Laura Feld there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also met, who else was it? Jack was there, but he was...
Jack and Joanne were there. You met them through the open mic.
Gary Offel.
Oh, yeah.
Who was at my very first open mic before I ever met you, or before, like, when I was just like, I got to try this. I did an open mic in Springfield, and Gary Offel was the first person I met.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him again. And I think he's the one that coordinated that whole thing.
I think he did. And I think he did put that show on.
Then there was a bunch of people there that are, like, part of the scene, but I didn't know him.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't remember. It's like, I just remember me. You were there.
Jack
was there.
Joanne
was there.
Joanne was there.
And I met Laura and Gary. Laura and Gary. They should combine their names.
Lorary.
Lorary. Gorla. So flash forward to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You had come back to Dayton from Chicago. I now live in Chicago.
I know.
And
I'm so jealous.
You.
And kind of not.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm here as, I'm not in Chicago the most.
Right.
That's the best way I can put it.
Kind of live there.
Most of the time, I'm not at home.
Yeah.
So now you have recently been named the facilitator.
Yes.
Of Wiley's Sunday Comics.
Yes, I am.
Are you rebranding that in any way?
Not really at first. Nate Washington and I have taken over for Mike Canistero and Joanne Biscup.
Which was, this all started sort of with Jack.
Jack and Joanne were.
How long did they do it?
They did it for years.
Yeah.
And before that, they did it at the Funny Bone.
Yeah.
And then Jack stepped away when he got married again.
Jack Wilson. And then, and that's when Mike came in?
Yes, and that's when Mike came in, because it really is a two-person job.
Sure.
Which I'm finding out because I'm the only one that really does the emails.
Uh-huh. Well, what was funny to me was that when I was like, you know, Karen, and I was like, great, there's already dysfunction built in.
Because,
well, we just know what you're good at, and we know what Nate's good at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was a similar situation with Jack and Joanne.
Mm-hmm.
And Joanne is a really good face,
mm-hmm.
whereas Jack is a very diligent man.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so some of those attributes have been mixed around a little bit, but I think it takes, you know, a colorful mix.
Oh, and we are a colorful mix.
Absolutely.
We sing Ebony and Ivory sometimes under our breath.
That's good.
Yeah.
More people should do that.
I agree.
This country would be great again.
I wholeheartedly agree.
We should change the national anthem to Ebony and Ivory.
That would be so great, but then other people would get offended because they weren't either one.
I ain't no Ebony. I ain't no Ebenezer. So, have you had your first... Our inaugural
show is actually this Sunday,
oh,
which
snap.
You are on.
I'll be on that show.
Which is awesome. Full circle. Kumbaya.
It's the circle of life.
And then I'm really excited for that, actually. But what we're doing a little differently is we'll have probably two open mics a month, and then we'll do either an improv show or something similar. This month, we have two open mics. Somebody else is using... Actually, I'm on the third show, ironically. It's me, Jeff Bang, and Jesse Nutt are doing a show on the 18th. And then the 25th, we're doing the Dayton Comedy Squares.
Interesting.
25th of October. That, we just decided today. Lori Graves is generously coming back to run that.
Nice.
I'm booking the comics for it now. I'm so excited.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's neat. I think that's neat that you... Well, I'll say this. There's something to be said for a weekly open mic.
Of course.
In Dayton.
Yes, but there are so many.
But there are so many mics, or mm-hmm. bar shows, whatever you want to call them. And I think that without exposing comics and audience members to the variety show, so to speak,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you lose... For instance, I didn't know I liked stand-up more than improv until I started doing stand-up.
Correct.
And it's not even that I like it more. It was just that it was like, oh, my God, this is so much easier for me.
Well, you're better suited to stand-up, I think.
I think currently I am too.
Because you're not, I think with improv, you had a tendency to be in your head because you didn't want to disappoint your team members.
Yes,
and
for sure.
I think stand-up, you're only worried really about disappointing yourself.
Sure.
And I think it's a little easier, at least for me.
Yeah, I think for me, well, my tendency was, in improv was, I gotta laugh, let's get out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like this is going too long, it's not going to be funny if we keep going. And I could never really let go of, how are we going to make this awesome? When in reality, it needs to be, we're just laying bricks here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The wall will be beautiful.
Yes.
You know? Your brick doesn't have to be great.
Agreed.
So I think you're right about that. I think I just have a natural inclination. I'm kind of a punchline comic.
You are like a punchline
comic. Ta-da, this is what I made.
Thank you, I'm Adrian Cosby.
Yeah, and then get out of there as fast as you can. Don't look back. Don't say bye.
Don't say bye.
So we have the show this Sunday. Who's anyone special? Besides myself.
Vincent Holliday will be headlining the show.
Awesome.
Dusty Harvey is the host. Every open mic that we're doing now has just two out-of-town spots. You're in town, so you don't count. It is a bringer show.
But I have Illinois tags now.
Oh, that's cute. We are making it a bringer show again because I feel like if you've been doing comedy for a year and there is no one you can ask to come to a show, well, then you're not really doing comedy anymore. I think you've kind of, if you can't get five people to come see you ever, either you're not doing comedy well enough and you need to get better, and the only way you're going to do that is to do it in front of a different audience.
Mm-hmm.
Or an audience that mm-hmm. doesn't consist entirely of comics who are your friends,
mm-hmm.
who are outside smoking.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different vehicles, right,
mm-hmm.
for that. And I think the bringer is the simplest for everyone.
Agreed.
It's just certain people are like, I don't know five people. And it's to me, it's like, if you don't know, if you can't talk to five people, or you can't ask five people, or you can't, what's the word? Enroll five people in what you're up to in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you even trying comedy?
Right.
Not to say that you're not funny.
No, but who's going
to
be your audience?
But there's other things you can do to be funny that don't require you to ever interact with another human being. You can start a YouTube channel. You could be a mime.
Don't encourage the mimes.
No. You could be a guitar act.
Oh, yeah. You could do both, actually.
You could do both. You could be a mime and guitar. The thing is about it is that comedy is about making a connection with an audience. And if you're like, I just perform, I don't talk to people, then it's kind of like, that's like saying, all I do is put on horseshoes. I don't learn how to put on horseshoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can't come to blacksmithing with a graduate degree. You know what I mean? It's an apprenticeship. And the apprenticeship in comedy is very long.
Yes, and I think that's what, I think generally, generationally speaking, there are certain generations that are used to immediate gratification
mm-hmm.
because they had the internet when they were kids. And I think that, you know, I've been doing this year, I should be getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've been doing this for 6 months and I should have my own show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's part of that I admire very much that, you know, you love this so much that you want to put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think there's a piece missing for a lot of those guys that I don't know. When I started stand up, the slogging through it, I understood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Is it fun? Sometimes not. But you have, it's just what you do, and you learn. You learn from people that have been doing it much longer, and both what to do and what not to do.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, I've had a lot of people say things like, oh, well, we don't, you know, Dayton just now has a comedy scene. And I took that. I had a comic say that, whose name I won't mention, that they basically said, you know, up until a year ago, there was no comedy in Dayton. And I got really offended, actually. And I said, you know, just because you didn't know about it.
Doesn't mean it wasn't.
Doesn't mean. In fact, we had a really good one for a long time. And it's insulting.
I think. Here's what I noticed. when we started, when we were starting, you had been at it, I don't know, how long had you been at it when I started?
Just like a year.
Okay, so.
I mean, not even that long, I don't think.
I mean, we knew about Ryan Singer and Beth Stelling, a couple, maybe a couple other people.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was kind of like, I didn't see who I am today in the community, then in the community.
Right.
You know, I didn't know who that guy was. I mean, it was probably like a Jack or a Joanne or somebody like that. But,
sure.
But in a way, they're way farther ahead back then than I am even now. And in some ways, I've never taken on that level of responsibility, you know, running an open mic in two different clubs, things like that. That's a commitment to the game.
Sure.
That I don't want to say I've never made, but I'm much more of like, I'll produce a show. I'm not going to produce a weekly recurring thing.
Yeah, I'm starting to, like, sometimes I'm thinking, am I going to regret this?
Yeah. I think like anything else, it's just a job and you get good at it and you get burnt out on it after a period of time. But I mean, this has been a long time coming for you, I think, at least taking over first the Sunday thing.
And I think I was groomed for it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you, how many times did you fill in for somebody to do it? I mean, countless.
Nah, kind of. So. I mean, yeah, I just kind of, I like helping.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
Well, you're like, what we have in common, what we share in common is an inability to watch something get fucked up on purpose.
Yes.
Or because of God, yes. Not knowing, you know, ignorance.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I'm having a hard time with words today. It starts with an in.
Inability to.
No, it's like a person who's not up to par. They're under.
Imbecile?
Yeah, that's good enough.
Idiot?
Idiot, imbecile. Incapable.
There it is.
Of doing the job that they've chosen. The number one piece of advice that I give to people in a hostile environment, what I call a live fire environment, which is, it's like when soldiers are doing their drills and they're crawling underneath that barbed wire and somebody's shooting a real gun. Keep your head down. You will get shot. You know what I mean? It's like you have to know what a real gun sounds like and be able to operate. That's like a bar show on a Friday night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like this is a live fire drill. You could get shot. You know what I mean? Keep your head down. Do what you do and don't read too much into the fact that nobody's paying attention. And what I see a lot of comics do in that situation is they set a goal for themselves. That's completely self-centered. I'm going to do these 5 jokes. I'm going to do 10 minutes. And no matter how well it's going.
Right. I'm not going to, you know, if I dig a big enough hole, it's not going to matter because I will have done what I wanted to do.
And I think it's that same kind of lack of vision that has somebody say, you know, up until a year ago, there wasn't, you know, the one I saw was, there's starting to be a pretty good scene here in Dayton.
That's similar.
Okay,
yeah.
So what I see there is, you know, do I smack somebody's hand because they said something out of ignorance or out of malice? And it was strictly out of ignorance.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was told. The same thing, it was more ignorance, but it was like, listen... Come, let us reason. Yeah. I will teach you, child.
Sure. I hear so much, like, so many, like, obtuse comments like that from time to time. Like, comics will say something like, yeah, I'm just going to work Wiley's because they let me say what I want to say and the funny bone won't let me cuss and this, that, and the other. And I'm like...
You're not going to get anywhere.
You don't... The words that are coming out of your mouth don't even make sense.
No.
You're not working anywhere. If they offer you a weekend, you're not working there. You're practicing. And there might be some money involved. But it's like to call anything that you're doing in your first 1 or 2 years work, if you're not like some sort of phenom who's touring and, you know, you have booking agencies calling you to do paid work, maybe I could say that you're working. But I don't like to get caught up in those types of labels either. But I hear a rush for people to be like, I'm arrived. I've arrived. I've done 10 open mics now. And I was funny my whole life. I was funny as a kid, you know. And that should mean something. And it means nothing.
Right.
It doesn't mean you could be on TV last week on America's Got Talent. I did a open mic at a showcase at Zany's on Tuesday.
Yeah.
With the guy who was a finalist on America's Got Talent, and I was like, I know you. It was so funny because he was like, I was like, I know you, and he was like, have you ever seen Wildin' Out? And I was like, no. And he was like, oh. And I was like, he's like, where are you from? I was like, Dayton. He's like, I've done the Dayton Funny Bone. I was like, ah, you middled for Chris Porter. And he was like, yeah. I was like, my friend John was the MC that weekend. So that's. I also knew him from America's Got Talent once I saw him on stage because he's got this really awkward energy. He's like, Jacob, I can't remember his last name off the top. I'm sure someone will tell me. Hands down, one of the funniest comics I've ever seen in my life. Literally comes to the stage with, I mean, like a full bag of Asperger's. I don't know what it is exactly.
A full bag?
I mean, it's
like it's overflowing?
His first sentence gets a huge laugh because he's just so awkward in a beautiful way. I mean, he's a beautiful, beautiful kid, but very he unsettles the green room when he's in there. He's but it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's almost like, God, I wish I could package that. Nobody wants to buy what he's selling, but it's damn hilarious. You know what I mean? Nobody's like, I want that for myself. I want to be that awkward.
I want to be that awkward.
But it's if all you wanted to do was be a comic, it's okay. My shoes are like carpet. then it would work perfectly. So then the other thing I wanted to say was going back to Dayton's Got a Good Seat. So when we started, I didn't really see who we were trying to catch up to.
Sure.
And so that's what I hear when I hear a statement like that, is that I'm basically at the top now, so you're welcome for creating the scene. But I don't think that's what he meant. It's just that when I apply my lens to that statement and I see how things started for me. But when that statement was made, I actually was thinking to myself, so when the Clash stopped happening at the Funny Bone,
mm-hmm.
there was a gap for a while of, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 comics that weren't really from Dayton, but were coming into Dayton to do contests and do the open mics and stuff like that I would see all the time. And then it was kind of like, once the Clash stopped being as popular and they ended up canceling it, it seemed like there was a trough drop off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like where new talent wasn't really coming in.
Oh,
there we go. Hey. Setting some mood lighting. Got the music going. We're doing big things now. I hope I don't have to copyright this music infringement. But in any case, I think the trough is coming up. I think it's been on the way up for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think that with a lot of new talent, we also find a lack of humility.
And empathy.
Sure.
Honestly.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I think that's what I'm finding.
I'm seeing some of the people that are kind of stepping up to the plate to be of service to mm-hmm. comedy, mm-hmm. but also being not revered by their peers.
Right. And that's the danger.
Yeah.
The good news is that I don't care if people like me mm-hmm. so much because I'm old and I have enough friends that aren't necessarily comedians. So if the whole comedy community actually hates me because of whatever reason, it's not going to ruin my day.
Right, right.
So that's probably partly why I did get picked to do the show, because I'm a grown-up that doesn't care.
I think the best thing that there's a whole limitless things that you bring to the table to make Sunday Comics as good or better than it's ever been.
Well, thank
you. Your directness, your candor.
Oh yeah, I don't mince words mm-hmm. anymore.
And I think there's a lot of you're not coming back if you do that again.
Yeah.
Which I didn't hear a lot of before.
Yeah. Well, and that's
not to
say
that it didn't happen. And it's rare that you have to tell a comic that.
I'm also.
I mean, it's like twice a Sunday. Yeah. Not all the time. It's not every comic.
I think what I'm really trying to, Nate and I both are trying to make clear, is that this is a bringer show, and if you don't have five, you aren't going to go up, because it's a business and we're trying to make the business better, and we're trying to also get you to know we've got it made in Dayton. You know, if you go to Chicago and do a bunch of open mics, there are 50 people on them, and you could be number 49 and never get time.
And everybody in the audience is also a comic who does not give a shit about you.
Correct. So I think what a lot of new comics do, and actually comics that have been doing this a while, I think what they don't understand is that we really have it made here. This is a great springboard, but there are rules to follow. Mm-hmm. And this is bottom line, this is a business.
A comic said to me one time, and I use that term loosely, when I suggested that if I'm producing a show, an open mic even, and and I put people in the seats myself, then I would charge the comics to go up. $5 for 5 minutes.
That would be nice.
Not a lot, but if I put the butts in the seats, then you gotta pay me. And he was like, so stage time's a commodity now? And I said, when has it never not been a commodity? I mean, it's always been a commodity.
Right.
It depends on who's putting the valuation, but it's always been of value. It has intrinsic and monetary value for everybody that steps on one.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know what that mode of thinking was, but if I bring five people to the show, then it's not like the club owes me something, but I've definitely earned 5 minutes worth of conversation into a microphone.
Absolutely.
Which is what most open micers are. It's not even a conversation, it's like a speech.
It's just word vomit.
Yeah. And I don't mean that that hasn't been me. It's largely it's been everybody that's ever done it.
Yeah, so. Of course. I get up there and say things out loud that I sit down, I'm like, what was that? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But that's why it's an open mic. That's what it's for, you know? And if you want to get better at comedy and you want to be somebody and you want to, you know... I think what has changed, at least what I've seen change, and this was... Mike Canister actually said this to me, and I loved it. He said, when we started... we got up on stage because we had something that we needed to say.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, what he's seen and what I've also seen, so I'll own a piece of this, is people getting on stage because they want to be on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have anything to say. And comics are getting up having never written a joke. And just because, a lot of people do it. And it's always been the case, I'm sure, but... they get up on stage because they want the attention.
Uh-huh.
And they're not putting in the work. And I've been guilty of it, too. I mean, everybody does it once in a while, but I think it's frustrating when every other comic that gets up in an open mic is up there because...
hey, look at me.
Look at me.
I think there's a Venn diagram or whatever of, hey, look at me. And then there's another overlapping circle. Mm-hmm. I don't know how big that is, but it's, I've got something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, some people have something to say, but would never go on stage.
Correct.
You know, and other people have nothing to say and just want the stage. So it's like, it's that beautiful thin mix in the middle of people that have something to say and actually want to go up there and say it. And I think the thing that I've been guilty of the most lately is not exercising the muscle of what is it that I want to say? What's important to me? Because a lot of the jokes that I do started with, this is important to me, and then I just took all the importance out of it by trying to make it funny. And
it's
so
hard to do.
It is, but it's one of those skills that you learn over time. The performance muscle of being on stage and being funny, you can do that without material, but it's a different set of muscles than creating material is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being on stage is like all legs. You know, creating the act, that's like breathing, you know, your arms, your face, every other part of your body. Standing on stage is easy. Coming up with the material and a point of view that gets a response, that's for talented people.
Well, I think you and I should challenge each other to a new joke this Sunday.
Oh, challenge!
Word, throwing down the gauntlet, thrown.
Are we going to write this joke? Do we need to do a premise? like a
if you want to pick a premise, or we can, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
You can do a one-word suggestion. You could do a premise.
Okay. So, well, I'm gonna give you what I want to hear.
Okay.
And you said you've done it before, so I want to hear Doctors Without Filters.
Okay.
In joke form.
Okay.
And so you give me a request about wanting to hear a joke about boobs or misogyny. Misogyny is the topic.
Definitely not misogyny, because I've heard that a lot. Remember, I'm running an open mic.
What
now,
about
so.
Anti-Semitic?
Also running an open mic.
What if it's an anti-Semitic boob misogynist joke with racist overtones?
Oh.
Only towards.
But I said
Indians.
A new joke.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. New joke.
How about. I want you to do a joke about. Living here but not living here.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
That's challenging because I get that, like, oh, you didn't even move.
Right.
But I see you more now that you move. And I got to go above and beyond that topical humor.
I want you to basically stand on stage and address that crap and make it funny. And even if it's not funny, just be like, I don't really live here, but I live here.
Excellent.
Wow, this is really bad music, and I think the show's going to start soon.
Yes, and I think that's also our cue to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I think, so we didn't address it, but we're in Wiley's
Clearly.
Comedy Club, and the show is about to start. And
it's Tim Meadows.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
you
my
didn't
fucking
know
God.
This?
No, I didn't know.
Oh, my God, this is so exciting. He was in my favorite improv group of all time. With my imaginary improv husband.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Ladies' Man is one of my favorite comedic movies.
But I guess you have to stay.
I don't know how I don't.
You do.
Okay. Well, Karen Jaffe, give us the contact information, Twitter.
I actually really just wanted an email if you want to do time, WileySundayComics@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can look for Keg Jaff. That's
K-E-G-J-A-F,
like Frank. And that's Twitter, Facebook, anything. Be my friend.
Branded. Well, branded. I hate it. Like, on Twitter, I'm... short blonde, and on Facebook I'm horny blonde, and
I'm
Instagram I'm Frank.
And like lofty aspirations as much as you can.
Oh my gosh, we never even got into lofty. Okay, so this
we can
is
do
part
that next
one.
Time.
Part one of the interview with Karen Jaffe. Totally unrelated. Here we are, part two.
Yep.
Totally unrelated.
Totes.
Karen Jaffe. I realized when I was listening back to part one that we went from 2011 to 2015 without much in the middle.
Yeah.
So I wanna go back.
Okay.
Circus 2012.
Oh, circus! It was a circus 2012.
We were renting various locations to practice our stand-up and improv.
Yes, we were.
Like a band of roving gypsies. I think gypsies lived in some of the places we rented.
Well, yeah. Gypsies and guy with cats.
So gypsies,
hoarders,
tramps, and
hoarders.
Thieves.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying?
Like,
okay.
It's actually, right. That's...
Circle of life. What was our reasoning behind having a performance space before we were really performing?
Well, it started with... Nathan Hall and David Brinkman and I wanting to get better at stand-up and not really knowing how besides doing shows. So I bought a crappy microphone and a mic stand, and we built a stage because David's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to look like we knew what we were doing. We recorded ourselves all the time. We would spend hours just in the space on stage with a mic and the mic cord. Not plugged into anything.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
But just so we could get comfortable with the equipment and just to be comfortable. And it's, I don't know, for me anyway, it was really hard to tell my joke
to two people. Mm-hmm. Harder than it is for me to tell my joke to 100 people. But it made me better.
Yeah.
And we would critique each other, and we would, you know, give each other tags and stuff like that. So I'm really glad we did it that way. I miss having that much disposable income to throw around a little bit.
I know what you mean.
But I'm really glad we did that.
Me too. And I'll tell you why. Because I feel like in every other performance, entertainment performance realm, there seems to be formal training for acting, for singing.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy doesn't have any real formal training, and anything that calls itself formal training for stand-up is either overselling it,
mm-hmm.
or it's... There's just... The training is in the doing.
Right.
Somebody can tell you a lot about how to sculpt something, but until you actually are touching the clay, you're not learning anything.
Correct.
And you have to have a lot of experiences. Yeah, I can tell you how many times I bombed, but that's not going to give you the experience of bombing.
Right. You have to... Oh, I love bombing.
It's one of the things that I realized... And just this year, just in 2015, I realized I'm not afraid of it for the first time in my life. I think there's been times when I've gone up because I knew it was going to be bad that I wasn't afraid in that instant.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, before I go on stage, you know, there's in the back, I hope it'll bomb, I hope it'll bomb, I hope it'll bomb. That's just like a small voice or whatever. But a couple of well-crafted, strategical... I don't even know what you'd call them, but really I would play outside of my comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
in a way to be like, it doesn't matter how this goes. The exercise is going ultra far out of the comfort zone. And a couple times of doing that, and it brings my regular stand-up into a much better place for me. It's almost like I have to kind of freak out every once in a while in order to be a normal person.
I love that you think you're normal.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah, I didn't think about it until after I said it. So we had this performance space, and I remember feeling like we were really doing something important when we were there.
Well, I think what also helped me, so my mom got sick.
Uh-huh.
My mom was diagnosed with AML, so leukemia, back then, and I was spending a lot of time in Columbus because she got treated at the James.
Uh-huh.
And to have that space... for me, was just saved me, because it was somewhere I could go and not talk about my mom being sick and not talk about, you know, the reality, the harsh reality of real life, which sucked,
uh-huh.
at the time. But I could go to the space and be there with people, surround myself with people who cared about me and who knew what I was going through, and was that everybody was okay with just not talking about it and just being like, okay, let's just talk about funny stuff and comedy. And it definitely just, it saved me.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Yeah, I think there's something, I realize, I think in my life, that I'm a compartmentalist a bit. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way?
I'm not, because I'm female, I don't think I'm as much of a compartmentalizer. I think that's more of a male trait.
Huh.
Just, you know.
It reminds me of thinking, like, for me, it's like, I go certain places to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like every, and I my friends, you know what I mean? I have different accounts. I would call everything an account. And, you know, I don't do my grocery shopping at the bank, for instance. You know what I mean? I go to the bank to deposit money. I go to the grocery store to buy my groceries. I go to the coffee shop to write my jokes. I go upstairs to work out, and I go to the lakeshore to jog. You know what I mean? It's like I do these, and
sure.
that gives me some sense of routine or normalcy. Well, I feel like that's what the performance space was for us, in a way that we could have done it anywhere else, but when we went there, we knew what we were going there to do.
Yeah, we were working.
Yeah. And I to be honest, I think back, like, as that being probably my most prolific period of time, as far as creativity, as far as...
Well, I think because we were all like-minded and we all wanted to be better, I think we were all trying to be better for each other, not just for ourselves.
True.
And that team spirit really, I mean, I work better as a team. And this is a very lonely existence, being a stand-up comic, because it's just... really you. I mean, you know, you have friends and everything, but it's more competitive than team building. So I think having that really...
It definitely fostered us. It definitely put us in a position of people looking at us as though we were a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw other teams that I was like, you know, I don't want to be on that team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it wasn't a matter of... That's when I started thinking about it as us being a team, because I would see the other teams and they'd be like, oh, you're one of those lofty aspirations people. Right?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, that's just the greatest name. You know what I mean?
Well, it's
for us,
we rented a loft.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was.
It was lofty. It was quick, though, that name came about. And
yeah.
I remember feeling like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
sure.
really all it was, a loft, and we were aspirational.
Yeah. That's what we had lofty.
So we called it Bird on the Wire. So then you get laid off.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really laid up. My company closed.
That's
company
a layoff. You didn't get fired for poor performance.
Right, yeah. The family business that we had closed. Actually, that was before my mom got sick, so it was just bang, bang.
Right, right.
Which sucks.
It's called the rope-a-dope of life.
Yeah, but, so I had a lot, I had a little more time on my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before my mom got sick, I had a lot of time on my hands. And, I really wanted to do something with that time, and I cannot express to you how much I love improv.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really, I know we talked about it in the last podcast, but it really, it changed everything for me. And I really wanted to bring that to Dayton and just to teach people. And it's, I still love it. Every week I come to a class and I laugh. And I smile, and I see people's worlds kind of change.
Mm-hmm.
Even just incrementally.
It's a support system, group, performance, panacea of cornucopia feelings / hilarity.
Yeah.
I remember my first 30 seconds in a room full of improvisers. And I knew for the first time in my life that I didn't have to explain who I was.
Right.
They knew who I was and why I was there, and they were all the same. It was like I found my people.
Okay.
It's like I've been like running across the tundra with a lambskin sack full of just enough food for one day.
Lambskin, because you're allergic to latex?
Latex. Yeah, it's got to be natural lamb.
Okay, gross.
But anyway, I found my people, and it was one of those things where it was like, if this is as far as I get, this is good enough. And I've said that several times over the course of being inside a comedy, like, if this is as good as it ever gets, this is good enough.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, with the, being in improv, this is as good as it gets. First time on stage here at Wiley's, this is as good as it gets. What was it? The first time we did an improv show,
we did an improv show
in Xenia.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
as it gets. It was just so many different like milestones where it was like, yeah, if this is the top, I'm okay with this. Even if this is the bottom, it can be the top for me. So, laid off, extra time. Let's just skip to the part where I inspired you to open an improv school. And we'll start
yes,
from
you
there.
You did.
When you were like, I don't know what to do with my life. And I was like, Karen, you will be great. You will start an improv school. It was kind of a Negro Demas thing. I don't know if it was... I don't know if I was clairvoyant or just seeing a vision. Mahatma Negro. I'm not sure. But I was definitely being a great human being.
Yeah.
And I saw greatness in you.
You did. You took me to Landmark Forum.
I forgot about the Landmark Forum.
How could you forget about that?
We went to...
It's another thing that changed my life.
What do they call it? The Amway of Self-Help is what I've heard
totally.
It being called.
Totally.
But I'll tell you, that's how I came to you.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Landmark, I don't know that I would have ever got involved in improv, but that was the first time I ever spoke into a microphone as an adult. And,
wow.
And people would come up to me and they'd be like, what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, we're pizza.
Pizza?
And I'd be like, you should really, you've you've got a good voice, and the way you use it, you should be in like radio or something like that. And I didn't, it didn't mean anything to me. Didn't mean anything to me until I got into improv, and I was like, oh, maybe I do have a voice.
Yeah.
So we're talking about you, and or we're talking about me and how great I am for inspiring you. And take me back to what it was I said exactly that gave you the spark to be the greatest improvisational school in Dayton.
I was kind of playing around. I had taught a couple people improv. I'm like, oh, here, I'll just teach it to you. Mm-hmm. No big deal. And I wasn't taking it seriously because, you know, why would I do that? Because we're just playing around. It's mm-hmm. fun. And you said, no, you could teach this. You teach already. Just do it and open a space and teach this and bring it to the people that's what you want to do. So I found a new space because the loft was 4 jillion degrees mm-hmm. in the summer. So I found a space that was supposedly air conditioned, but guess what? Not really. Still cooler.
Yeah.
And less gross.
Yeah.
And we were there, and you did. You said just go for it. What are you doing?
Yeah, I was great about that, wasn't I? No. Totally. Honestly, I think it was, you know, kind of a collaborative idea. I knew at that point I really didn't have, I think the stand-up comedy hooks were in me at that point, but mm-hmm. it seemed like just such a natural thing, because I think where we had been doing improv, it just kind of fell through, and there was definitely people wanting to do improv, and I felt like it was the untapped creative market of Dayton.
Yeah.
Without, you know, we had 2 clubs, you know, why not have an improv space? Because it wasn't really happening. And I remember we looked at a couple spaces. We ended up at that place with all the pillars. With
the livery.
The livery.
Yeah.
Where they used to make liver. It smelled like liver.
Well, it was where they kept the horses back in the day.
Right. That's right. It was a stable.
That might be why the linoleum still smelled like like horses and livers.
It was a big space. How long were you there for?
I was only there for a year. And then the Black Box Improv Theater opened right about when I was starting. They were starting to get their legs under them. And so I was invited to work with them.
For a period of time.
For a period of time. Which
and then
definitely taught me a lot.
Anytime you have 2 entrepreneurs sharing a space mm-hmm. in the same stream of consciousness, I feel like there's going to be room for... It's no different than if you were 2 chefs working at the same restaurant.
I think we just had different ideas of what improv is, and it was his space. So
yeah.
I vacated it.
I just think, yeah, I think, well, like my chef analogy was just that after a certain period of time, sometimes relationships become toxic. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't become untoxic. But I felt like the advice that I gave you was to choose your exit point.
Yeah.
Instead of having it forced upon you. But
and I did.
And
I thank you for that.
Exactly. And it was because I'm great. And
obviously,
all my advice is good.
Completely.
But what happened after that?
After leaving
Black Box.
I rented another space, and I really got going. I had troops at that point. I started growing even more, and we had another space back in the Scary building.
Oh, yeah. On
the first floor. We didn't have to take the, what you like to call the slave ship elevator.
Slave ship. It was made out of slave ships crafted into a freight elevator.
That's right.
You could hear the slaves scream and the chains.
Only when you close the door.
Rah!
Put
your hand out my pocket. Yeah.
So we had that space for a while. Again, not air conditioning. So that was hard in the summer. But I feel like that's where I really came into my own as far as teaching. Like, I really felt like I knew what I was doing. I was coaching more than teaching. I still had some beginners come in, But at that point, I was really just coaching the teams that I taught. And that felt good. And I think everybody really pulled together to be team lofty.
Yeah.
In that space. I mean, they were still on their own teams, but everybody kind of knew what I was trying to do.
Uh-huh.
And were happy with the, and drank the Kool-Aid,
I guess. Yeah.
And were on point with the message. So it was great being there. And then I thought, oh, I'll open a theater. And that didn't work out because of construction issues. But I'm happy now that it didn't work out because now I get to be here at Wiley's for classes, for shows, have everything here.
Amen. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
It is a natural marriage of unnatural entities. You can't marry a building currently.
Not
but
yet. Well, the base can marry, so I feel like
I feel like you should be able to, there's enough spooge in this place that you should be able to get pregnant, let alone married.
Don't. I'm sitting on
not that. In the green room. This thing never existed before.
Mm.
I don't know what this was before.
This was part of the showroom before.
Was it?
Yeah.
They boxed this off?
Yeah.
Hilarity.
Yeah, this was part of the
good
showroom.
Good for them. Good for them for doing that, because one, showroom is large, and two, no green room?
Yeah.
Well, the green room that we used to have was like a
the
refrigerator.
Ice machine.
Yeah, yeah. It was like kicking off the excess heat from the ice machine, so it was really easy to concentrate and get in your space in there. And this is like
a very green room.
It's very, it's
you're
it's
sure
Kermit green.
Could be white right now, and I wouldn't know it because it's green.
It's like Kermit the Frog mixed with a little bit of white.
I was thinking crack, but
okay, white. Oh, yeah. Powder, crack, whatever. So now we do Lofty Aspirations out of
the oldest
comedy club in Ohio.
Yeah.
Wiley's Comedy Joint.
Yes.
And they have the fluorescent tubes lit up out front.
Yeah.
That sign is amazing. It's going to be the cover art for this episode of the podcast.
Oh, good.
And we're going to perform tonight, both of us.
If there are a lot of people on the show, so I might have to step down. But if I do, I will tell you the joke that I wrote for this evening at the venue of your choosing. But yes, probably both of us.
Okay, because I'm not really going to accept anything less than hearing it from the stage. I was like, I'll cede part of my time to call you onto the stage and make you tell the joke in a very awkward situation.
I don't care.
I know. And so, yeah, so let's still go with plan A.
Okay.
And then if you don't end up going up for whatever reason, hell, I might not end up going up if it's running too long, because no one ever say, I'm really good with my triple negatives. Never, let me start over. Never not, no one say. Never not, no one ever let it be said. No one never say. So let me put it to this way. Let me say this. It's been too much. Let me say this. If someone says I'm a stage whore, they're a liar. Because I will give away my spot. I will go up, do my spot, but do no jokes. I'll go up and just be silent.
Don't do that.
Surly.
It's probably really
lascivious. I don't even know what that means, but I'll be it on stage.
Yes, you do know what that means.
So if we have to make the show go, I will be here no matter what, and we'll go. But I think that definitely needs to be a point sometime. If you do cede your spot, somebody who is a veteran of the comedy community needs to at least bring you up for some sort of acknowledgement, some sort of receiving of roses.
No.
Some sort of baptism of fire.
It's not necessary.
What do your people do? Smash a glass or something? Mazel tov it or something? I don't know. A mazel tov cocktail?
A mazel tov cocktail. Oh my God. Adrian Cosby, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Mazel Tov cocktail.
It just comes to me. You know, these catchphrases just come to me. That's my opener, so don't steal it.
Don't worry. I think we're good.
Good. Let's discuss what your plans are for the future here at Wiley's Comedy Joint. As lofty aspirations, are they giving you free rein to teach your classes and
relatively. I mean, I don't have the club every night or anything because, you know, Aaron has a life and he unlocks the door.
Let me ask you this question. Let me interrupt you. Start talking. How much of the credit that you built before new ownership took over did you bring to the new ownership? If you had to rate the amount of credit that you had before here, which I would say your credit rating on a scale of 1 to 10 was about a 8 or a 9, as far as like they would, if in a pinch they would throw you the keys and be like, open up the place. Just shy of that, right? That's where you were with old ownership.
I could work here. But not on stage with old ownership.
Right, okay, right, yeah.
I mean, okay, yeah, so I am female.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So before, you had a much more infrastructure, you were credit-heavy infrastructure.
Yeah.
New ownership takes over. How much of that credit transferred?
I think because I've always had a relationship with Aaron, it was really easy for me to say, look, you know, I'm here if you need anything, if you need me. Pretty much all the same staff is here. So it was easier for me in that regard because everybody kind of knew who I was. Aaron really gives me a lot of leeway.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I don't really see the new ownership so much as we've discussed. So... but I will say this, Chris Bowers, the last time he was here, asked me about, the last time I saw him and spent any time with him, well, two times ago, asked me how the fireworks competition was coming along, and I laughed, and I said, I am not Joanne.
Oh my God.
And he said, I know you're not Joanne, you look like you're in charge of stuff. Now, pretty sure he was lying, and I gave him a lot of shit for it.
That, I was just like, Bowers? That was a great save, Doug.
Yeah.
That was a great save.
It was.
In the history
I'm impressed.
Great saves in history. But it's true.
And the last time I saw him, he said, no, I'm serious. Yeah. I knew you weren't Joanne, Karen. I know who you are, and you definitely... I know you definitely get shit done.
Yeah. That's what makes it such a good save, is that... Even if he was just pulling it out of his pocket as a save, like I got some saves in my pocket, I'm going to pull one out right here. It has to be accurate for it to work, and that is accurate. And so whether he's lying or not, which I don't think he was.
No. I still had to blow him a lot of shit, though.
Of course. Well, that's your credit, right?
Yeah.
that's an amazing compliment, especially from a guy like Bowers. Not to say that he's compliment shy or doesn't give them or anything. It's just that's... what you want to hear from new management.
Yeah. And, you know, Todd McComas is a great guy. We've had some nice talks. I've talked to Tony. I met Steve Hofstetter for a second, but, you know, the meeting, when he called the first comics meeting of the new ownership, it was Yom Kippur, so I couldn't go. And he actually understood, having been raised Jewish. But, you know, I was cracking up about that. I'm like, really, guys? Really?
Mm-hmm.
This is the day you pick? Comedy.
Yeah.
Juice.
No respect. rest in peace.
Yeah.
I went to that meeting, and it was much better than what I heard other meetings went like. But when you hear how these things go from other comics, it's kind of like hearing it from kids. One time I was working at this camp, and the kids were being horrible during dinner. Like, we had like a dinner that we all went to, and everyone was there with all the other age groups or whatever. And then I had to take all the boys back to them. I was a dorm counselor, so taking them back. And I told them if they behaved through dinner and all the way back, then they could stay up an extra hour.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
And as we got back to the door, they said, I said, Mr. Adrian, Mr. Adrian. Actually, I've never been okay with Mr. Adrian. They call me Mr. Cosby for sure. Can we stay up late? We were good. And I was like, no, you can't stay up late. They're like, what? What do we do? I was like, you guys have been fucking up all night. And I didn't, like, I'm not a cuss-heavy individual anyway. You know, a lot of people don't think I cuss just because of my articulation. But I cuss, but not around kids. At that point, all my jobs had been with kids. I knew how to not cuss. But for some reason, like, I had gotten too cool with this group of kids, where I was like, y'all niggas was fucking up and shit, okay? I know all I said was, you guys fucked up. And they were like, oh. And I was like, hey, guys, relax. You've all heard the word before. I'm sorry I said it. It slipped out. Didn't mean to. Well, flash forward 2 weeks later, I get a call into the office, and I have to answer for cussing the kids out. And there was a number of parents that had called in, because their child had said that I had called them little pieces of shit, fucking sons of bitches, like some stuff that they were like, we can't even read what one of them said. And I was just like,
clearly not true.
I was like, yeah. And they were like, we're telling you this? Like, we've been getting these calls for 2 weeks now. You know what I mean? We didn't bring you in on the first one because we know how these things go.
Right.
We're like, we're guessing that you said, fuck. And I was like, yeah, that's all I said. Okay, yeah, we've seen this before. It was like an algorithm. And so I think that's what happens with comics, because the stories that I heard about the Louisville meeting, when they took over in Louisville, it was basically like, sit down, shut the fuck up, and you aren't shit. And I was like, I don't see that. Especially not the way that they came here. They had like a panel.
Yeah.
And it was as good as, I mean, I left here inspired to be a better human being.
Well, and I saw, I watched the video of it, which I was so glad they recorded it.
That's interesting. I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah, they recorded it. And I got, so I was like, oh, okay, well, I can see what I missed. And I was really impressed.
Yeah.
And what especially impressed me was when they were talking about, you know, wanting women comics and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, and I don't know that that's necessarily true. But they talked a really good game,
mm-hmm.
and I do feel, I know there are a lot more women headliners now.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've worked 2 weekends as a host. I'm hoping to get another one soon. I'm not really asking, mostly because I don't feel like it's my place
mm-hmm.
to ask. But I was impressed, to say the least, with the video and hearing what they had to say. Having said that, I wish that the owners would be here more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. I know they have other clubs to run, but it'd be nice to see at least one of them every now and then.
I can't really say. I can say, you know, in the few times I've been here recently, I haven't seen Bowers, but the first couple times that I was here after the switch, he was here, mm-hmm. and I always talked to him, and he seemed to be in good spirits.
Yeah.
Haven't seen.
Thank you.
And we're back.
And we're back.
And we're black. One of us is half.
Yeah, I can dance though.
Yes, more than both halves of my heritage, probably, because there's no like. In fact, I thought about that before. I might incorporate some dancing into a pre-game something, because I think for me, I'm so horrified of it that if I do that, there's no fear left in the system. Dancing and having my teeth knocked out are my two irrational fears. And
well, you got one of them down.
One of them is very irrational. No. I've seen the horror of both. But I digress.
Yeah.
Tonight's show has how many comics on it?
I think it's 14.
Each one's doing 1.5 minutes?
Each one's doing 5 or 6 minutes. It will depend on how many show up. I was hoping to get, you know, a solid 12.
I don't know if anyone's noticed this, but I don't post about shows that I'm at or going to, typically. At least I haven't for over a year now.
Yeah, I have noticed, and I noticed you posted today, and I thank you for that.
I got a little response,
yeah.
And that warmed my heart.
Yeah.
Because, three sentences, I think? It took me about 15 minutes.
Really?
Just because I wanted every word to be right. You know, I was doing it for you.
Thank you.
And to do my part to let people know so that I can have people show up. And I just really felt like this is a special event with you taking this over. It's another chapter in the life of Karen Jaffe, which has been, since I've known you, in constant transformation.
Yes. And hopefully in a good way.
Yeah, well, I don't think... if you're repeating a lot of mistakes and having no happiness, then I would say it's in a bad way. But it seems to me right now that you're happier than you've been in a long time.
Yes.
And this whole taking over Sunday night and the future of the Sunday spot, I think, really plays to your wheelhouse of being in charge of some shit, like Chris Bowers says.
Thanks, Bowers. I do like being in charge of shit.
Mostly, you might need a t-shirt that says, in charge of shit.
In charge of shit? Mm-hmm. I should. I should just wear it every Sunday.
I'm in charge. Or something like that.
We're in charge. Ooh, Nate and I could both wear them.
Yeah.
We're in charge. Be nice.
And both have number one on the back.
Yeah. Well, I think... I really like when I work at a job where I get paid, because this, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily enjoy being in charge. I'm very happy as a team player, mm-hmm. and I am very happy to do what somebody else tells me to do and not have to think. I've had a lot of jobs like that.
Yeah.
But when it's something like this and I have a very good idea of how I like to see things from a comics perspective, that's when I like being in charge, because I can actually... affect change.
I only want to be in charge when I think I can do a better job than what's currently being done. And then it's not so much a matter of, like, I want to be in charge. It's like, if I can't be in charge, I need to leave. And that's why I don't shop at Walmart or McDonald's anymore. Because I don't want to take charge, and they clearly have no idea how to serve a customer like me. Which, I don't think I'm a bad customer, but if you're... I'll tell you what it was. I went to a McDonald's in Colorado, and they were... like, smiling and, you know, have a nice day and thank you, and repeating the order back and everything. Just doing everything right. And then the next time I go to McDonald's is, like, in Riverside.
Ah.
And,
not so much.
Not even close. Like, the cashier smoking a cigarette in the vestibule.
Yeah.
And then has to come in to take my order or whatever.
And then they're mad at
you. I ordered three things, one of them being a cup of water, and the water was the only thing they got right. So it's like... the layers of, like, me taking it back up, be like, this isn't what I ordered. And they'd be like, give me something else that wasn't what I ordered. It was just like, and I realized, I'm not even mad at McDonald's. I'm not mad at the employees there.
No.
I can only do business with places that, on the minimum, get that your cashiers, the people that come in contact with the customers, have to at least pretend to be friendly, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've been in customer service, whole life,
basically,
for the most part? Yeah, as have I. So there's, for me, there's zero excuses. And if you can't do it, don't do it.
Sure. And I think what it really boils down to is these employees can't care about the customer if their employers don't care about the employees.
Exactly.
And that's never more prevalent than when you go to Walmart, because...
I don't go to Walmart.
Thank God.
I never... Okay, that's not true. When I am in Louisiana... and there isn't another store to shop in,
uh-huh.
I will darken the door of Wally World.
Yeah.
However, I don't go here. I don't believe in Walmart. I know it exists for a reason, but I don't. I am much, much happier shopping somewhere who values me being there.
Yeah. To me, it's just a matter of their business model doesn't match up with my life morals. And so... it's not like, I'm not calling on other people not to shop there.
Correct.
You know what I mean? It's just a matter of, like,
it's a choice.
I can't stand going into a place, getting exactly what I wanted, paying less for it than I expected, and still being miserable when I leave.
That's exactly right.
And that's McDonald's and Walmart every time.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's wrap this Marinacci up so that we can grab a eat the bite.
Yes.
And get ready for the show.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. I'll be singing on the podcast in the future episodes, so get ready for that, listeners. Round of applause for Karen Jaffe, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. And if you're in Dayton, Karen Jaffe is the person to contact for stage time. This is an ideal location for comics passing through, because we're on the I-70-75 corridor. And a lot of times coming through, if you're doing like a Yoder gig or something, there's no Sunday night. So coming back, you can almost always jump in here and see what's going on. You know, with enough diligence, you can email Karen, grab yourself a couple seconds on the stage, and you know, impress the owners. And maybe you come back and you do a showcase, and maybe you come back and you're famous in like three sets and stuff. If you've never done comedy before, that's how it happens. I don't want to make any dreams happen or anything, but that's how it happened for me.
Wow.
I did my first open mic, and then I booked my commercial, and then nothing for 4 years. So.
Oh, I forgot about your commercial.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, Adrian.
Yes. So, Wiley's Comedy Joint, Karen yes. Jaffe.
WileySundayComics@gmail.com.
We have a Facebook page.
We do.
For Wiley's Sunday Comics.
Like us on Facebook.
Like
Lofty Inspirations.
Like Lofty Aspirations. Improv, stand up, intimidation. This bitch got it all locked.
Kinda lost, like a southern brown wind. she whispers.